This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Gary, welcome to Five Questions.
Thank you for having me.
Or should I say, welcome back. This is my sixth interview with you since 2007. And congratulations on 12 and a half. An amazing read, of course. You know, not too much of it surprises me based on knowing you for such a long period of time. And it's your sixth business book. And of course,
did anything pop out as somebody who obviously has interacted and consumed and we've interacted a lot? Was there anything that was caught you?
You know what? For me, I think it was reinforcement for something that I've been thinking about. And you and I were similar in many ways, obviously, you know, came from like an immigrant family, hard workers. You know, I've been working since I was a little kid like you. And so like the work ethic thing is penetrated through everything you've done, of course. But one of the things that you said actually is that curiosity is one of the top soft skills that you mentioned in the book. And to me, that makes so much sense because when I think about what drives me, it's curiosity. It's the reason why I have a research business and I want to uncover the biggest workplace trends. You focus on marketing consumer trends and just overall trends about where we're going, you know, in the future. So curiosity, like I even, you know, I was talking to David Copperfield and he even said curiosity is why he got into magic. So the fact that that was one of the soft skills and emotional intelligence skills that you focused on, I think that really resonated with me because it reinforced how I'm thinking about what motivates me and why I do what I do.
I love it.
So going on to that, I love how you included it. And most people don't think of curiosity as a skill. How has your curiosity led to you experiment and have breakthroughs in business and your life?
I mean, it's foundational for me. You know, in hindsight, my attachment to youth and child-ish, like optimism and curiosity, is essential. I think curiosity leads to opportunities. Humility, I think, is actually a very important partner to curiosity and innovation. So not only am I inherently curious, like, oh, what is that? Or why do people like that? Even at this point in my career where my time has, for lack of a better word, humbled me in what its value is on paper, I'm willing to spend 70 hours, which is to go down an empty road.
Yeah.
Right?
One of your great examples, Gary, is you have, you know, invested or participated in social networks that haven't succeeded, but you've learned from those experiences too, which has helped you then later invest and make decisions that have greatly benefited.
I would have been the first investor in Tinder if that wasn't incubated at IAC because of what I learned with Yobongo, which was a big loss for me, and tried to get into Highlight, which was a loss. And so I think that's exactly right. I think people undervalue learnings. They really do. Reps, the at-bats. You know, I think when we say, this is a good analogy actually, first time I ever thought of it. Hey, go in the gym and take 1,000 free throws. I think everyone who's listening right now is like, oh, that's going to help that person be a better shooter. What I don't think we go deeper into is realizing that person's going to miss 397 shots in that session if they're like early in their basketball life. That's how I treat business with curiosity. I'm willing to miss 397 shots so that later I'm an NBA player. And I think curiosity along with humility lead you down paths that actually occasionally become fruitful. And the key for me as an entrepreneur is if I lose 91 times, and I win 7 times, the 7 times will offset the 98 at-bats. And most people don't see that.
And you can't replace actually doing it. As in, I've done tons of research on this about how people best learn. And from a workplace perspective, on-the-job training trumps everything. Because you're actually doing it and learning firsthand what works, what doesn't work, what you like, what's going to benefit the business.
Nothing is more obnoxious to me than watching business students give operators advice when they've never actually run a business. it can be right in theory, but it lacks context.
Absolutely.
And practicality often. And, you know, and that's not to say, I mean, I'll give you a good example. Head coaches oftentimes never play the sport professionally, but they've played it somewhat normally. And it's a little bit of context, but you can be a great head coach and not be a great player, and that's fine. But yes, I think curiosity is a massively underrated word in the business world. And that's what this book was about. I mean, kindness. When has kindness even been part of the business lexicon ever?
Not since I've been around.
And to me, and it was way worse before you were around. And for me, right? And for me, it's the obvious way to build something meaningful long-term. Mm-hmm. People sticking around for the long-term leads to continuity. Continuity, a good atmosphere is less political. Thus, people are actually focused and going fast. And so it's interesting stuff.
Absolutely. And curiosity is only one of the 12 essential emotional skills that you cover in the book. And the other thing that I thought was interesting is there's a half. So which skill do you feel weakest in, and how are you trying to improve it so you can be more effective in every area of your life?
Yeah. So the book is called 12 and a half. And my point in the book is like, these are the 13 traits that I subjectively believe currently based on my experiences with myself and others, really are foundational for modern business success. The half comes in because I feel like I'm very far along with the 12, and here's my half, and other people have their halves. But my half is, which is a stunner for a lot of people who don't know me well, or more importantly, for almost everybody who's listening who knows me as Gary Vee on a podcast or on stage, but doesn't know me as Gary Vaynerchuk, an executive. My great half, my whole career has been candor, which is wild, because the ability to be candorous in interviews or on stage or on television or on podcast is a strength of mine. You know, I get unlimited, like, hey, Gary, I love your no bullshit approach. I really appreciate you shooting it straight. But as an executive, speaking to the masses with you right now, it's really easy because I'm not speaking to an actual human being. Speaking to Tamara or Sally or Ricky or Chanel is so much more challenging for me. And I always try to skirt around the bone. If I had to give critical feedback, it would always still come in a package that was much more about optimism. I would skirt around the actual issue, and I was trying to find different ways to get them there without telling them, like, hey, you're really struggling, or you're not good at this, or, you know, like, it just, I was always scared that it would lead to fear and spiral out of control. And I really struggled with candor, and 2 or 3 years ago, I started getting better at it, a lot better at it. Cause I was, my subconscious became my conscious. I'd always known, it was always hanging in there, Dan. Like, I always knew, like, man, for somebody who really doesn't care about the money, really, truly, like, meaning, of course, I want some, but, like, it's not about that. It's not about this. It's about the process. I love being liked. I like being admired. Why do I even have anybody who's ever worked for me not love me? Oh, wait a minute. It's been this candor thing, right? Dan, you're doing great. Dan, you're doing great. Dan, you can get this. Dan, listen, the way you're working with Johnny, listen, maybe you'll just, and then all of a sudden, Dan, you're fired.
By the way, I just, Gary, please. What you said is so important, because you want to be liked. Very few people will admit they want to be liked, but I think at everyone's heart, if they were very honest with themselves, they want to be liked as well.
So I adore being liked.
How many other people do you know who says, yeah, I want to be liked, but that's, they do want to be liked.
I love being liked. I also often in interviews say, I don't care what people think. That's actually equally true. I can hold both of those feelings. What I mean by that is, if Johnny Pants 99 says, you suck, Gary Vee, it's hard for me to have weight in that. I care a lot more what you think of me, Dan, than Johnny Pants 93, because we've interacted a lot over a decade. I care a hell of a lot more with Alex Raffington, what she thinks of me. She's one of my three admins and really knows me. I care about her opinion of me way more than I care about your opinion mm-hmm. of me. And so that's what I mean. But all in all, I want Johnny Pants 93. I want you, and I want her to like me, because I'm aware that I got very fortunate, lucky, a word that I hate using because I think people weaponize it, but very lucky and fortunate that I was given natural DNA that is good, parented well, circumstances that led to good work ethic and kindness and a million other things. So yeah, I mean, anyway, candor is my half. And when people go through this book, whether it's gratitude, So many people lack gratitude. It's wild. Humility is impossible. You know, I come with heavy conviction and confidence, so people don't see this in me, but the way I operate my business, humility is a core foundation of what's going on with me. You know, empathy is well documented at this point in my career. I named my damn winery after it. And you kind of go through it, self-awareness. One of the things that makes it very easy for me to navigate is I understand why somebody wouldn't love me. If they just saw a clip on Instagram where I dropped the F-bomb 9 times and I go aggressive at something and they're like, who is this guy? Of course, many people with the way they were raised would be turned off by me. That's self-awareness and empathy. That's, you know, so there, I really go into it in this book, but it's also things like tenacity and ambition. And most of all, my biggest argument in the book is like, look, the soft skills are actually the hard skills, right? Like I can find anybody who can have the talent to do the math or the creative or the man, like you can find them. Show me the people that are excelling at humanity and I'll show you a company that if they hire that way, have a totally different outcome.
Yeah, especially in the world where it's increasingly getting automated with new technology. If the technology's promise is to do much of what our hard skills do for us, then what remains is the soft skills, the emotional intelligence, everything you talk about the book. Now, where you take things a step further, which really makes this book interesting and valuable, aside from just telling us, hey, here are why these are important, how they've applied to your life and made you successful and other people successful, how do you tailor these individual soft skills to different people? Like you mentioned, like a coworker or secretary or someone you interact with, environments and situations, because that's where things get complicated for people.
It's the only thing that matters. Like a vanilla strategy without context is always going to lose. I mean, I deploy different tactics on these traits to the same person based on the day of the week. I have a different contextual thought process if it's raining outside versus sunny on how I have to be as a leader. I literally like compassionately and empathetically recognize that there are humans on earth that are very affected by weather.
And so little things matter is what you're saying.
In a real way, I actually manage differently on a Tuesday than a Monday based on the weather, let alone a million other. I just had a tough meeting, by the way, just now with a team that has been dominating all year. Now things are different. You know, some bad news from the client and now like I have to be empathetic to that. I can't talk to them today the way I talked to them yesterday. When you're a true leader, when you're trying to achieve in humanity, in business, in life, if you are not capable of adjusting at every moment to every nuanced variable, you are creating vulnerabilities.
And you know what's really interesting, Gary? One of the big things I recognized early during COVID is that everyone's in a unique situation. Meaning like I would talk to people who were pregnant and had COVID. I talked to people who had 2 children and was like a single mother living at home or was an entrepreneur or everyone, you know, income situations where you live, you know, do you have kids or not? There's so many different variables. And as a leader, it's all, you know, what you said is very fascinating with, you know, depending on the weather, time of day, et cetera. But it's also like, what's this individual's life circumstances? Because work and life, as you know, are more blended. I mean, think about, you know, all the remote work that
were you able to skim the book? The answer is yes, by the way, to what you just said. Did you skim it? Or were you able to actually read it?
I'm more like you. Yeah. I skim.
You got the gist. That doesn't even register for me personally. I'm very grateful for you even knowing it exists, let alone skimming it. Let me ask you this. Did you skim the part where I talk about a scenario, a make pretend scenario, where the employee that's upset with the manager may want to consider the fact that something atrocious happened to the manager's life that day?
Yes.
So I think one of the things that I'm really proud about this book is I think it gives a holistic, much more nuanced thought, which is when you're an employee, you just have an inherent thing of like, manager, what are you going to do for me? Fuck you, what I'm going to do for you or company. But we don't deploy, we tend to talk about empathy down. Mm-hmm. Hey, leader, have empathy for your people. But we don't talk a lot about, hey, employee, have empathy for your manager. If a manager has proven to you that she or he has been solid for a year and something atrocious happened today out of left field, I see people canceling that manager, like, oh, I knew it. Fuck you, Sam or Sarah. What about having compassion and empathy to the thought of like, man, I hope everything's okay with Sarah or Sam. This is out of character. We don't do enough of that. Cordialness, civility, empathy. We need more.
And all of my research has proved, I've interviewed tens of thousands of executives, managers, HR leaders, employees. And you know what's really interesting? The higher up you go in the hierarchy, the more they're suffering from mental health.
100%.
And so I've done a whole course with LinkedIn about managing well-being as a leader, because they're the ones who are suffering, but no one's thinking about it because they're making more money. But they have more responsibility, so that's more stress.
Dan, if I wasn't completely detached from everything professionally, my success, my failures, the money, the accolades, the haters, the pains, the fact that every day, all that happens to me is problem after problem after problem. Yeah. That's all I'm a firefighter. If I wasn't completely detached, it would be impalpable.
So I'd love to switch gears as much. I know that you are like Mr. NFT, but you're also like NFTs is like part of your career, obviously. Like, you're always forward looking, you're always testing, you know, with your own NFTs and the marketplace you're launching and everything that you've been doing. So you've said that 98% of NFT projects will go to zero and called for an NFT winter. What do you think will be the 2% that appreciate long-term in value?
I'm not sure. I'm incredibly positive. My big bet is CryptoPunks, just given the nature of its status of establishment.
What about like IP, like, you know, like VV with NFTs and like Disney NFTs with like Marvel and Star Wars?
The problem is I come from a collecting background, so I'm too smart.
Me too.
Good. So you know this. Good. So you know this. Not even close to every Spider-Man has value.
What about the first ever Spider-Man NFT?
Of course. The question becomes, though, which one, right? Maybe like versus on-chain versus what if Solana wins the day in 12 years? Then it's going to be the first Solana Spider-Man, not the first ETH, right? So we're too early. See where I'm going?
Yeah.
There's a lot to think through. You could bridge over to different chains. There's a lot to think through. What is actually an NFT versus a digital asset? Maybe closed environment. You know, decentralized.
It's switching away from being a closed environment, though. It's going to be
the question. The question will, I know that, but the question will become: will the market accept it as the first, or was it the first that minted on mainnet because they didn't got it? Because now it won't be the first that's minted. So there's all of it's awesome. Like, I actually have no idea.
At a minimum, you're having fun and you're learning about this space. You don't know, but you're willing to, you know, see what's going to work. And especially for your business, because NFTs is wrapped around you're doing.
I also like the fact that the results are going to be the results. I don't know. I have hunches. I will spend my money and put my reputation on the line against those hunches. And I have the humility and the confidence to navigate that, because I realize that if I am wrong, it's incredibly, you know this, I enjoy talking about passing on Uber twice.
Well, because it's an example. It's a great example of you're not always going to be right.
Yeah, it's also the truth, right? Like, fuck, like, you know, so if CryptoPunks disappears in its relevance, like, and becomes Friendster, right? Then I'm like, okay, I was wrong. I shouldn't have bought that. And that will be just as good learning content for my audience as if I was right. Too many people are attached to success. I'm either attached or detached from both success and failure. I'm obsessed of the oxygen of the process, right? You know this. You and I grew up in the revolution of social media, personal brand moments of that too, right?
That's how we broke out, for sure.
That's how we broke out.
Yeah.
You are very aware, because you were actually there. You're not reading it in my Wikipedia. You are aware that when I hit the scene, there was 500 other people that in theory looked like me, right?
But when you did Wine Library TV, I had no interest in wine, Gary, but I still watched the show. To me, I knew you were going to be successful.
I think that's fair. You said to yourself, because you're thoughtful about psychology, that, okay, wait a minute, this dude may be different because I'm not interested in the subject matter, but he's compelling enough for my interest.
You could have talked about anything.
Right. What you didn't know at the time, nor did anybody, nor did I myself, other than my own hopes and convictions and intuitions, is that I was obsessed with not compromising my reputation for anything at all costs, including how I predict, AKA observe. I don't predict, I just talk early enough. The way I handled myself, you know, I'm not transactional. The way I like to have true relationships. You're smart. You know where I'm at this point. I'm doing this show because of you. I'm busy. I don't, you know, but this is what I like about you, because I think you're awake.
But I'm a long-term Gary V person, right? It's, yeah, we'll be talking when you're, 70 yes, years old.
But I think you probably could have been long-term other people who along the way decided not to reciprocate relationships.
Yeah, I just saw your future early on, and I was like, it's worth the investment, and you kind of you both reinforced what I knew and showed me a path forward at the same time, and I think a lot of people would agree on that.
That's very nice. I'm incredibly grateful at this point. I'm turning 46. I know we're recording this on Wednesday. I don't know when you're gonna drop it, but on November 14th on the Sunday, which when are you dropping this? Next week, a couple weeks,
2 weeks. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. So, like now I'm 46 as everyone's listening, and fuck man, I had wisdom at seven. I hung out with 80 year old Eastern European Jewish begrudging grandpas on the, at the park in Queens. And these 85 year old smug from the old country and the hard life, they were captivated by me and I of them. I, to this day, believe that I'm an old soul, that yes, I was born with wisdom and then parented with it and then circumstanced with it. And the fact that I found my way to be able to pass it on without expectation of others is a gift. Like, thank God I was able to make money and fulfill myself with a roof over my head, mm-hmm, and food on the table in a manner that didn't require me to monetize my audience, right? I got so fortunate, right? So many people that are great communicators and do what I do, they're required to monetize their audience because that's the only way they can get their selfish needs. I was able to get my selfish needs out of being a retailer. VaynerMedia is a fucking $300 million a year business. I'm a businessman that happens to also desperately enjoy talking to people at scale. What the people on the other end have felt is, wait a minute, the other shoe never dropped with this guy. Mm-hmm. There was no funnel to this or that or this. It was a real relationship, not a transactional one. And that, I think, has been the pedestal that I've been able to be put on by the audience.
Absolutely. And what's your best piece of career advice?
That your word is bond. It's really helped me, man. Really, genuinely. My dad instilled that in me. My gift of gab, I could have been a cult leader for fucking Christ, right? Like, I am captivating, you're right. And the fact that, do you know how many days a year I thank God for making me a nice person? When you know you have a super communication superpower, you shiver down your spine of the thought, if you weren't in a good place, what damage you could do. And I have history to show me. I know who Hitler is. I know who Mussolini is. I know who Jim Jones is. You look at the history of, like, when you are given that gift of communication, you could go Gandhi and Martin Luther King, or you can go Hitler and Mussolini. And like, fuck, not that I want to put myself in those territories because I stay in a much smaller place in society, but I'm aware that, and I'm grateful for that. And I think everybody has their version of communication skills. I think a lot of people listening right now don't realize how much of a legacy and a good legacy they can leave if they had the courage and the self-esteem to put out things they believe in. We can help each other. And unfortunately, negativity is louder than positivity. And that has played out over the last 15 years. And I take on a huge sense of responsibility to speak about optimism and practicality and hope and good stuff because I believe it.
Absolutely. And we talk about personal branding. We've talked about this for such a long period of time, whether people call it reputation or whatever. Consistency has always been important when building a brand, as you know. And the advice that you just shared, you've been sharing this for way over a decade. And it's because I think because your dad taught you it when you were younger, and it's something that has stayed with you. And
it's also, I understood it was something that was, you know what, it actually inspires me because I do believe it was taught to me. I believe my natural state does have a little bit of a little too much schmooze. I know who I was at 8. I remember how I sold baseball cards at 10. The sale was more valuable than my honor, right? It just whatever it took. And, you know, as you become a little bit older, you know, I was able to be in an environment where lying was demonized. And so my dad really took a lot of my vulnerabilities out of me in scaring me. He scared me. He scared me straight at some level. And he caught me at 13, 14. So I'm 14, 15, 16, 17. And I start to it's almost like working out. I reformed. And by the time I became, and then it was just fucking over. Like I was just in such a good spot, right? And then by the time I'm 22, I'm this full product of my mom instilling the majority of the good shit, my dad really plugging the hole on what could have been a huge vulnerability and limited my upside. And here I am as a 46-year-old man, and professionally, I am in a very unique spot and have a lot of opportunity to really shape a conversation. I'm incredibly hungry for this book. I really want people to understand that the good traits are not over-coddling, not soft, not la 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 land, that actually these good things actually lead to empires.
Yeah, and this will clearly be part of your legacy. Well,
I hope so.
Everything you just shared is such great advice. I obviously urge people to read the book, and you know, I'll be following you forever. And I think that the legacy you live is going to be a really positive one, promoting the, you know, emotional intelligence and skills that people really need, not just professionally, but personally. Thank you. So thank you so much for being on the show, Gary.
Love you, pal. Pleasure. Have a great day.